Welcome to the Financial Literacy Bootcamp, where certified financial planner Dominique Henderson discusses financial topics in plain English for the investing public. Dominique is the owner and founder of DJH Capital Management, LLC, a fee-only registered investment advisory firm offering comprehensive financial planning and wealth management services to entrepreneurs. You can visit them on the web at www.djh-capital.com or on social media by the hashtag Financial Literacy Bootcamp. Now here's the host of the Financial Literacy Bootcamp, Dominique Henderson.
Welcome to the Financial Literacy Bootcamp. I am your host, Dominique Henderson, and the Financial Literacy Bootcamp is designed to help the financial services industry to be more relevant, reliable, and respected to those we intend to serve. And we do that each week by describing financial topics in plain English for the investing public. So welcome back. This is episode 48, and today we're going to be talking about something a little different, a little less generic, and I apologize to my weekly listeners and supporters out there. I typically don't do this, but I have good reason for it, and maybe you'll learn something new if this doesn't apply to you, so hopefully I will accomplish that goal. But we're going to talk about strategies to maximize executive compensation. And the reason for that is because I do have an expertise there, and a lot of what I do with clients is around that. And, you know, it's kind of like second nature, and I do it so often. I was like, I guess I should talk about how I do that. it was kind of like a duh. But anyways, I don't typically, like I said, talk on specific topic discussions like this. But this will be for anybody that is C-suite, director level, VP level, and you receive various types of executive compensation to kind of supplement your retirement planning. So things like restricted stock or restricted stock units, non-qualified stock options, incentive stock options, things like that. Dealt with that in a former life, also dealing with that in my financial practice now. So obviously you can get more information by visiting our website, djh-capital.com, or giving us a call, 214-699-7599, if you're so inclined, before you listen to the rest of this. So, but yeah, I wanted to go through that. And the way I'm going to do that, I'm going to give a couple disclaimers. I'm going to be telling a story. It's a parable. Which is probably the best way to kind of illustrate this. So excuse the voices or the lack thereof of color. I'm not an author, nor do I read my stuff all that often, but I'll try to make a distinction enough so that you can understand. I also need to give a disclaimer about the advice that we're giving here is not specific in nature for a for instance an individual. You'll need to seek the advice of a professional to look at your own particular situation. So don't take what I'm having here and try to do it at home, that you might hurt yourself. But anyways, I've written a couple articles on this, which I will put in the show notes for executive comp and things of that nature, which would be really probably helpful for you going along. And I wanted to kind of expand on some of the concepts in those articles. So that's what I'm really going to be doing in this story. And the end goal here is, if you're listening to this and this applies to you, and you definitely don't have somebody, I hate to step on the toes of other compatriots in the industry, but I'll just say this is specialized. I mean, you have to have seen it before. You have to have worked with it before. And if you haven't, you're going to be giving generic advice, which may or may not help the individual. So like I tend to do, if I come across a prospective client that needs an expertise that I don't have, I just refer them away, just because I want them to be helped more than I want the planning relationship or the revenue from that. So, all right, here we go. The parable of the two business executives. And if you're on YouTube, the video version may be not as detailed as I normally have it. I just have a picture here. But anyways, let me give you the disclaimer, and then we'll move on. So this information or the information provided here is intended to be educational in nature and should not be considered or construed as legal, accounting, tax, or financial advice. The strategies described may not be suitable for all individuals. This story was provided for illustrative purposes only, and no representation is made that a person acting on this information will achieve the results shown. We encourage you to speak with to seek the help of a tax, legal, and or financial professional when employing any of the mentioned strategies. Okay, so like I said, the best way to handle this, and just what I, you know, like I was talking about in my 401k episode that we did a couple few episodes back, you can get really confused on some of this stuff, and I mean, it's just outsource it. I mean, we've got plenty of capable professionals across our industry that can help you with this instead of you trying to save a buck. So, all right. I think we're ready to go. So let me read the story here, and then we're going to go over basically about three planning points, and we'll be done with it after that. Okay. So I want to introduce. Okay. So let's get started. So we have two individuals. We have Ron Smith and Bruce Davis. Those would be the two characters in our story. And we'll begin. Ron Smith is the vice president of sales for Mega Pharma Inc., a thriving pharmaceutical company based in the U.S. Ron has happened to be with the company for about 15 years, and he's experienced great financial success there. And his success is now having him look at hiring a financial professional to help him manage his finances. Before this time, he managed them pretty well on his own, he thought, at least according to most of his peers. But there have been some events in the past 6 months that have caught his attention. One in particular was about 7 months ago when his closest friend and fellow colleague, Bruce Davis, who works for Alpha Biotech, was laid off after serving his company for about 10 years. Although this was bad news, Bruce was a great saver and also had a wife that was working, and so they would be fine financially. The real problem that Bruce discovered was something he shared with Ron during a conference that they attended together. And here is how the conversation went. Ron says to Bruce, "How's the job search going since the downsizing at Alpha?"
"It's actually going great. I've had a couple great opportunities lined up, but I'm really kicking myself over something."
"What's that?" says Ron.
"Well, I met with a financial advisor that was recommended to me by someone, and as a result of one of the consultations, I found out that I had left some money on the table through my executive compensation program. It really frustrated me because there was no recouping of it, and it was just something I overlooked because I never really understand all of the benefits that I had been awarded in the first place."
"Wait a minute. What do you mean on the table?" says Ron.
"Well, the story about this is a long one, Ron, so let me make it short. It basically involved some of my vested options that had to be exercised within a certain time frame of me leaving Alpha. I never knew that little detail, so it's as if I never had them. Poof, gone, you know."
"Wow, and how did you find this out?"
"Well, I met with a financial advisor, and I was just going through all my stuff because my intentions was just to roll over my 401k. And he happened to ask to see my retirement plan, and in the process, he uncovered it from there. So apparently each company has the discretion in each of their retirement plans to provide a certain level of benefits due to and based on different laws to their employees. And one of the stipulations in Alpha's plan was that the vested options had to be exercised by a certain date of me separating service from the company. And mine happened to be about 90 days.
"Well, Bruce, it seems like you should have got something in the mail from that, right?"
"Ron, I probably did, but you know how it is. You get the mail and you stack it on your desk. You never get to it. And you know, this is the kind of stuff I really don't understand anyway. So I just procrastinated and, you know, I didn't feel there was really any urgency."
"Wow, Bruce, I understand. Man, I'm sorry to hear that. Would you mind passing your guy's info on to me? I think I may want to talk to him about my upcoming situation."
All right, so that's basically the end of the story. And what ends up happening is Ron meets with Bruce's financial advisor and uncovers a couple of things that I've seen before in my practice that I want to kind of highlight and give you three strategies, okay? So the first thing is Ron, and let's go to the whiteboard for this for you YouTube people that are paying attention. Appreciate you out there. All right. So Ron has four distinct tools to build wealth in his retirement plan. And they consist of a profit sharing plan, which is a 401k. Right? I've gone over this before, what a profit sharing plan means. This was the infamous 401k rollover. If you're taking notes, you want to go back and listen to that. So he has his 401k, and his company will match up to 6% dollar for dollar. Okay. His second wealth building tool is a defined benefit cash balance plan, which favors younger employees, and it is a pension plan that basically means, well, let me give you what the company does. So the company matches 7% or puts 7% of his annual salary in there, okay? But basically, this is like a, this is a plan. It doesn't necessarily have I don't know how to best describe this. You're not going to see, you know, you'll see kind of like pseudo or fictitional balances, basically. But you have, in most cases, you have the option to say, I want it invested in this mutual fund vehicle or this target date fund or company stock. And that balance will grow. And in most cases, you get to have like whatever the ending balance is when you retire, roll that over into like an IRA. In some cases, you can get you may want to leave it there and just get like an annuity payment off of it when you retire. So that's kind of how those work. The third thing he has, and by the way, those are two qualified plan options. Qualified meaning usually before tax, right? There's some kind of component there. Now, that's not to say you can't have a Roth 401k. It's still considered a qualified account, though. All right, so now the non-qualified stuff that's probably going to reside in like a brokerage account. I've seen cases where you get stock or stock units or even options, and they go into like a brokerage account at another firm that that your employer is using to deposit this stuff into. So you can have, so this guy, Ron, he has restricted stock units, okay, RSUs, and they have a 3-year vesting schedule, meaning that he gets the award, but if he wants to sell the stock he's been given, he has to wait 3 years. He has to be with it. And most companies do that. They don't want, you know, they're just not giving away something for nothing. You gotta earn it. You have earned it, but you've got to stay vested with them. And that's kind of incentive to keep employees on instead of having them jump across companies and jump ship, if you will. So after 3 years, he gets to sell these. And when he sells them, they're going to be basically W-2 income for him. So he'll have to figure out some tax strategies to kind of minimize that effect if he wants to sell those. That's just an aside. But anyways, four... I'll just abbreviate, non-qualified stock options, or sometimes called NSOs. You also have ISOs, which are incentivized stock options, but he doesn't have any of those. Those work a little differently, and the scope of this podcast is not to talk about ISOs. I'll probably do that in another podcast because they get into AMT and all that kind of stuff, and it gets a little complicated. But non-qualified stock options, these have a 10-year vesting schedule, meaning that I take that back. These could be different. They'll probably have a 3-year vesting schedule and then 10 years before they expire. So let's just say 10-year expiry and 3-year vesting. The vesting can be different. It just depends on the company. Typically 3 years though is like the max, and there may be some companies, I haven't seen many of them that have beyond 3 years, just because they want to they want to keep you incentivized. I mean, but anyways, so what happens with these is kind of like the stock. Once you exercise the option at the grant price, then that becomes W-2 income also, the NSOs, that is. So you have to find some way, and what we do here at DJH Capital Management is we create an exercise schedule for you, right? So that we end up maximizing the wealth building potential while lowering the taxable income potential there. And I have an article on that too. I'll try to remember to put that in the show notes. Also, we're racking up a list of show notes stuff here. But anyways, so let's get back to Ron. So this is Ron's situation. He has these three wealth building tools that the financial advisor has come up with, or discovered, uncovered, whatever. And he's noticed the first problem here, which is a very common problem that I've seen with C-suite executives that have these methods to build wealth. The first thing is there's a particularly high concentration in the employer stock. And, you know, there's a lot of different biases that go on here. Sometimes it's just plain old ignorance. But, you know, you have a loyalty. This company's been providing you your paycheck for X amount of years, and you know your paycheck arrives every 2 weeks with regularity. So why not own a lot of their stock? That is typically the response that I see. But having a diversified portfolio, even if you do get these stock awards, is something else that you need to kind of consider in how that can happen in a tax-efficient manner. So that is one thing. Employer stock concentration high. The next thing is this guy is in a 33% tax bracket, and as you remember in the story, he was expecting a raise. So he's likely going to go from 33 to 39 if he doesn't figure out some way to lower his taxable income. Okay. So the financial advisor comes up with these strategies, which I'm going to go back to PowerPoint now. And so here's a couple of different ways you can do this, bringing this in for a landing. So the first thing that you want to do is avoid Social Security tax. So you're probably asking, how do you do that, Dominic? Well, you're going to have to pay Social Security tax in your payroll, right? So that FICA number that includes your federal withholding, any state withholding or local withholding that's applicable, Medicare tax, and Social Security. That is paid by both the employer and you. But what you can do is, if you're a C-suite executive, you're probably getting over the Social Security maximum compensation that is subject to FICA taxes, which is $127,200 for 2017, right? So it makes sense that, say, for instance, you were going to exercise some of your options or sell some of your restricted stock, you would want to wait till after you hit that limit, because you're going to be paying taxes on anything that you exercise and that gets counted as W-2 income prior to hitting that limit. Why don't you just go ahead and save the 6.2% that is calculated as tax off of that money, right? So that's one way that you can kind of decrease the amount that comes out of your pocket to Uncle Sam. Another thing that you would think about is, like I said earlier, creating an exercise schedule for dollar cost averaging. So basically the way this works is, let's say you start with, and let me bring the whiteboard back up. Let's say you start with a high concentration of employer stock. Like I said, let's say it's like 75% of your retirement portfolio. What you'll want to do is over time, and let's just say this is time zero, and you want to get to something that's more reasonable, which I would say somewhere between 10 to 15% over your working career toward the end of retirement here. Now, one caveat. Owning a concentrated position is not as big a deal as most people say. And I'm going to sound like I'm talking out of both sides of my face right now, but just bear with me. In The Aspirational Investor by Ashwin Chhabra, which I've referenced several times on here, he actually has a chapter in there about your aspirational bucket, which holds the concentration of your concentrated wealth, like your what they call non-systematic or idiosyncratic risk. This is how you really build wealth. So Donald Trump built wealth in the real estate market, and he had concentrated positions in real estate. That's risky, but that's how you build wealth. You know, you don't really build wealth by a diversified portfolio. That's how you preserve wealth. At least if you want to parse vernacular, building wealth really comes through concentrated risk, and preserving wealth really comes through diversification of risk. So those are kind of the ways that I espouse it. But going back to this example, he may want to keep a concentrated position of pharma, but that's not the most diversified way to do it. And as he approaches retirement, depending on the health of this company and different things like that, you'll want to decrease your concentration over time. So that's what I'm doing here in this timeline. And what an exercise schedule will do is basically dollar cost average your selling practice or your selling transactions that you're doing into the price of, you know, whatever the company stock is. And, you know, the basic idea, and I'm running out of room here, but the basic idea on a stock chart is that stocks generally do this. So if you dollar cost average over time, your average is going to be considered, or your average is taking advantage of this progression over time if you dollar cost average into that selling motion till you get to a smaller percent. So it would look like you selling, in this case, it looked like Ron selling Mega Pharma stock and then going to buy a diversified portfolio with that. And he will continue to do that until his retirement date over time. And he generally gets the best average price for selling Mega Pharma stock instead of doing it all at one time. And secondly, he does not get a big tax bill or egregious tax bill in any given year. Okay. And you just want to do that all before the expiration date. So we can help you with that. It's not that difficult to do if you specialize in it. Obviously, it can be difficult to create if you don't know what you're doing. So the last thing would be maybe using some type of trust vehicle to transfer property. And this, I'm cognizant of the fact that our estate tax exemption is fairly large right now. When it was smaller, this was really probably a used tool. But right now, being at $5.49 million, that is the first $5.49 million per individual is exempt from estate taxes. But one thing you may want to think about doing in this particular vernacular, I have a strategy that works here. So when you exercise your stock options, you're creating or selling restricted stock for that matter. The stock options are probably going to generate a bigger tax bill because of the fact if you get something granted to you on year zero and year 10, that stock is probably appreciated pretty well before the expiration date. So you're going to get a bigger W-2 income bill or amount that you'll have to kind of plan for. So you sell that, and then you're going to generate tax, obviously. Now, when you generate that tax, if you transfer some of that property or those options into a trust, for instance, or charitable lead trust or something like that, then you can basically use that upfront tax deduction to offset some of the W-2 income that you are going to or W-2 tax that you're going to get from that income on that exercise. So that's one strategy. And it obviously that involves a lawyer, which I am not, or estate planning attorney or something like that. But once you're talking about a lot of these, if you're, you know, getting a lot of compensation in the form of options, like, for instance, like maybe you're a part of a biotech startup or something like that, and then the company grants you options that are virtually worthless because you get them at the startup, but then the company sells. Well, you're going to have a big problem. Like, this is something that, you know, like Facebook people had that problem with, or, you know, they would have to essentially use a tool like this to transfer property out of their individual name into a trust, get the deduction, and then use some of that upfront deduction to offset the income tax that they're generating. So that's basically how that works. So those are some planning strategies in this particular parable of the two friends here. I think that if you want more information, the best thing to do is to just hop on a call with us, a half hour chat to see what your situation is and see if we can help you. Hopefully that's been helpful to you. So if you're listening on an Apple powered device, we would appreciate if you would write us a review on iTunes. We always appreciate that. We can be found on the web at djh-capital.com. On our blog, we'll be posting this and other helpful articles and podcasts along this particular line of information and financial literacy at djhendersonsr.com. We can be found on social media. Also, you can also contact us at the office at 214-699-7599. We receive emails at info@djh-capital.com. As always, have a great and prosperous day. Take care.